Chip Hazard.
I'm Talon Williams.
I'm Roger Sierra.
And we just wanted to kind of talk about our love for the Ninja Turtles. The Ninja Turtles were created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird all the way back in 1983, just kind of as a joke. Did you guys know that? Yeah, so it was just, they were sitting in a living room one day, and Laird had invited Eastman to kind of move in with him, because they were struggling as comic creators and all this, and he just kind of randomly drew this anthropomorphic turtle, and they were like, okay, what do we do with this? And so then they created three more, and originally they were going with like Japanese names, but it didn't work out for them. They're like, we just can't, like, nothing really sounds great. So then they went with the Renaissance, the Italian Renaissance, and we then have Leonardo, Michelangelo, Raphael, and Donatello. So that's how that came to be. It's just kind of all as a joke to begin with, and then when they were creating their like origin and backstories, anybody know where that came from? It's all based off of Daredevil. It's all based off of Daredevil. So in Daredevil, Matt Murdock gets his powers because this can of, you know, radioactive material falls off a truck, hits him in the face, he goes blind. Well, they kind of looked at that and they were like, okay. So they had that same radioactive material bounce off of the kid, hits the, this seems kind of loud. Is that loud?
No. Okay. We're not used to it, that's what
we're doing. Yes, that's it. Sorry, we're kind of new to this whole
sound.
Yeah.
We don't know how to sound this, so that's fine.
We still don't know what we're doing right now, so.
Don't listen, we do. But so yeah, they kind of have this, what we later find out is like TGRI mutagen, but it just bounces off this kid down into the drain, and the turtles are born from there. And even further into that, you have in Daredevil, the sensei's name is Stick. In Ninja Turtles, it's Splinter. The group of bad guys in Daredevil is the Hand. Ninja Turtles, it's the Foot. It's just all a kind of a running gag that really just kind of blew up, you know, out of nowhere. So they got how the first comic came to be created. It was like, they used their tax return and borrowed some money, and they printed 3,000 copies of the first issue. And it sold like hotcakes. They ended up going back and reprinting another 30,000 copies. Ninja Turtles was only meant to be one issue and never anything else. But that first issue boomed, and then now here we are 40 years later, and we're talking about the Ninja Turtles. So there have been a plethora of comic companies that have ran Ninja Turtle comics. So the original started with Mirage Studios. And the funny thing about Mirage Studios is, you know where the name came from? It was a mirage. There was no studio. Everything was done in Eastman and Laird's living room. So for the first run was like 10 years on Mirage Studios. And then mixed in with that, they did some stuff with Archie Comics, which is more of the cartoony, campy stuff, because take a step back, the original run of Ninja Turtles was very dark. not kid-friendly. There was a lot of blood and guts and stuff in that. And then when they picked it up for the TV show, they wanted to dull it down, but not Eastman and Laird, but the studio wanted to dull it down and make it more kid-friendly. So then we got the campy jokes and all that stuff. They were fighting, but there was no like real blood or anything like that. It was literally made for kids. So then in 87, I believe it was, Playmates picked up the toy rights for Ninja Turtles, and they saw it was the number three highest selling toy of any toy in that era. They, during their run, they made somewhere around 400 different Ninja Turtle figures. This is for Ninja Turtles, the villains, and everything. And they sold 1.1 billion toys from 87 to 89. So, I mean, you think about that, that's, in 87, 1.1 billion toys is insane. But now you bump that, you know, up to 2023 and think about, you know, if you do cost inflation and everything, I mean, that's the high, I would say probably the highest toy on the market right now, if you inflate, that's still on the market.
Oh.
Can I take a phone call?
I declined it.
Do you guys have anything to say?
Don't let me talk.
No, there's three. I was letting you do your thing.
I'll let you go do a little stuff first. But I mean, we like to do our panel. We go through our stuff first, and then we do interactions, everything like that. Pretty much just want to know, like, how did everybody come into Ninja Turtles? I mean, was it comics? Was it cartoons? Was it just seeing the toys? Is it a family experience? Like, what is everybody's experience with Ninja Turtles and how did you came to be with them?
Go ahead, right here.
Well, the first, so I kind of got into the cartoons first, and the first series I was ever introduced to was the 2003 series on the infamous 4Kids Entertainment.
Still good.
Yeah, and I remember watching it part because, you know, I recorded that along with other shows on my family driving to church. And, but I have to say that my favorite series of the Ninja Turtles that I really fell in love with was Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That was really good.
Really, yes.
Yeah, really,
yes.
Really good.
So that 2003 Ninja Turtles was closer to what the original comics were supposed to be, mm-hmm. than the 86 version that most everybody knows as like the Ninja Turtles. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I mean, I was born in 86 and the cartoon came out in 87. So that's really all I knew growing up was that version of the Ninja Turtles. I remember my dad would give me VHS, for the kids that don't know VHS, is yeah, and just probably people under the age of 15 in here that probably don't know what that is, but no, he would give me like 7 or 8 different VHS, and it was like 4 episodes long of the original cartoons, and it was like the first 4, then the next 4. I remember just watching them as a kid, like I was like, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, sitting there watching it, you know, Attack of Killer Pizzas, you know what I mean, where, you know, they had to go down the sewer to fight those xenomorph looking yellow creatures that Krang created, and, you know, like just really good memories of, you know, back in the day, because it does bring it back to my childhood, you know, when I watch it, and now you can watch it on Paramount Plus for nothing now, you know. So, but what's some of y'all's favorite? Go ahead, man.
I think I remember the original, I mean, obviously the original cartoon,
yes,
but I'm almost certain that the first like versions I owned came from VHSs at Burger King.
Yes.
Burger King VHS, and I think the one that I got was the Great Moldine.
God.
That's when McDonald's and Burger King used to get the good toys.
Yes.
Yeah, good toys.
The competition was strong back then.
Yes. So moving on from there, in 1990, we get the first live-action Ninja Turtles movie. And it just kind of blew everybody out of the water. Because it's very, like the original comic, it's very dark and everything, you know. And the cool thing about that is, anybody know who Jim Henson is?
Yeah.
He created the costumes. Jim Henson's Creature Shop created the Ninja Turtle outfits that we've seen in the movies.
And for the time, the technology of those was really, really cool at that time because it really had been, well, no, I'll take that back. Because it had been done previously because you think of like Jim Henson and think of all the characters that he would create for, you know, different movies in the past. And there have been more people in costumes, things of that nature. You think of movies like The Labyrinth and even further back than that to some. What was that one? I can't remember if it was like people in costumes or puppets. It's the one Peter Jackson did. You know what I'm talking about?
Meet the Feebles.
Meet the Feebles, yeah.
But it was puppets.
Okay, it's puppets. Never mind. But yeah, I mean, to see that, it's almost like we see these Ninja Turtles come to life, you know. And if you're a kid seeing that, it's like, whoa, you know. Even to a point where they actually did a rock show. Anybody remember that thing?
You're jumping ahead there.
Yeah, you're jumping a little ahead there.
Wasn't that after the first movie they did that? Oh, was that after the first one?
Well, they had the stage musical.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It was the Coming Out of Our Shells tour.
Oh, God.
Which was hosted, it was actually sponsored by Pizza Hut.
Yes.
Yeah, that.
Well, Pizza is the official pizza of the Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But back to that, the original movie first. So it was the fourth highest grossing movie in 1990, and it broke the record for the highest grossing independent film ever up until that point, making over $200 million.
Yeah.
So if that doesn't tell you how great the Ninja Turtles were back in the 90s, that's, you know. From there, we got the 91 sequel, Secret of the Ooze, which if you haven't yet, the guy who plays Shredder in that is here. Go see him, say hi. He's back there. I'm sure he would love to talk about, you know, him playing Shredder there. Now, he was the regular Shredder, not Super Shredder.
That's Kevin
Super
Nash.
Super Shredder was played by a pro wrestler named Kevin Nash.
Look at his face. He didn't realize
it. I didn't realize.
Yeah, yeah.
Kevin Nash. That was Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash was Super Shredder.
Yes.
Wow.
Very few people can, I see it. Very few people can fit in that big suit. Like, let's get the 7 foot guy from the NWO. He'll do. Yeah. Well, he was 91. Now he was Diesel at the time. So,
yeah.
It wasn't NWO yet.
I don't even know if he was Diesel then.
No, yeah. What was he? Vinny Vegas?
Maybe.
He was Diesel.
He was Diesel? All right. Yeah. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. All right, let's go.
After there,
we got the third movie,
yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, which was geared heavily towards the Japanese audience.
Yes.
Because they felt like the Ninja Turtles was faltering in Japan, so they geared it more towards the Japanese audience, which is why they kind of go back in time to feudal Japan. And going back and watching that movie,
it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't terrible. I remember watching it when it first came out, and I was like, oh God, this is terrible. But now at 40, going back and watching it, I was like, no, it's not terrible. Like, the story was good, you know? The acting may not have been great, but.
What you're talking, 1993 Turtles in Time movie had bad acting?
I'm just saying that. But if you thought.
Or was it 94?
I thought it was 93.
What was the second?
Secret
Wars.
91. Oh, that was right after. Yeah, so they did 90, 91, and then they skipped a year, hit 93.
Go ahead.
If you thought that third Turtles movie was terrible, you have never seen the live action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation.
Yep.
Anybody seen that one?
Yeah. Who did that introduce?
I don't like
that.
Venus
De Milo.
They targeted the girl audience and it did not work at all.
I think we just unlocked the repressed memory in his brain just then.
I got a different kind of question. So,
okay.
The way it's going now, what do you see going in the future?
Well, with Nickelodeon, it's still going to be the cartoony style it's going, but...
Good or bad, though, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's going to be good. Have you seen the next mutation? What'd you think of it?
I mean, I'm new to this stuff, but I'm an novice to this.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, your personal opinion of that movie, what did you think?
It was an opinion at the time.
Exactly.
Has everybody seen that movie, by the way, the newest Ninja Turtles movie?
Which
further down in my notes here, they actually have tapped that they're going to do a TV series that's based directly off of that movie. They've already greenlit it for 2 seasons. And it is supposed to debut February or March of 24. So, there's a little there.
But I like the direction you're going with. I know a lot of people don't like the animation style. It's fine with me, in my opinion.
I love it.
I just like that they don't take themselves too serious and don't try to force the basis of Ninja Turtles into it too much. I know it's kind of weird to say, like, oh, they're not sticking to just playing Ninja Turtles. No, they're expressing themselves differently, and it's still fun.
Because they're teenagers, you know, and it's like, they're what do normal teenagers think about? You know, popularity, you know, stuff like that. You want to be accepted.
Pizza.
Right, you know. So it makes sense for them to be similar to them, you know. And even some people say, oh, man, if they're supposed to be teenagers, they don't really... act like teenagers, act like, you know, full-grown adults sometimes. It's like, no, not all necessarily, because, I mean, but they made it a little true to life with this one, you know. So I do appreciate the fact that they're keeping at least, and even with, you know, the way that Splinter kind of treats them in a way like he's, you know, he's their father, but it's like, what typical teenager doesn't resent their parents at some point? You know what I mean? Or doesn't want to have nothing to do with them. They want to go out and be free and explore and stuff like that. So it makes sense from that perspective as well. So,
yeah. Now back to the god-awful Next Mutation. The ironic thing about that is the same people who created Power Rangers created that TV show, Saban Entertainment. And Peter Laird actually went on record to say that is the only licensed turtle project that he truly regrets.
Don't blame him.
No.
There's a crossover episode too, with the turtles and the
Power Rangers.
Yep,
yes. But no Venus
Flytrap. But two worlds there.
What is everybody's like favorite turtles villain? Because mine's Leatherhead.
It's got to be between Leatherhead and Bebop and Rocksteady.
Rocksteady and Slash. That's something about the Savage Turtles.
Yes.
Some of the turtles were voiced by different actors during the crossover.
Yes, you're right.
Shredder?
No, the turtles in that crossover episode, they were voiced by different actors than what were in the TV show.
Yeah.
Because they didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't have the license to use the TV show voices, even though they created the TV show. It's a weird thing. In my research, I couldn't ever figure out why that happened, but yeah. So, Little Man, you said yours was Shredder and what?
Oh, he was just saying why. But I was going to say, did somebody say Krang?
Right there.
But I was going to go more with his suit.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Good.
I have two favorite villains, I guess you say, from the 2003 Turtles show. My favorite was, I forget his name, but he was like the son of the Battle Lord of the Battle of Nexus. He had this kind of animosity towards Leonardo. And I thought he was kind of like, at the end he's defeated by turning him back into an innocent child where he has a chance to grow up into a decent person. I thought that was pretty cool, a unique way of taking down a villain, and from The Rise, Baron Drax him because he's almost like if a Disney villain got a redemption arc.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah. Anybody else? Did you have your hand up? Oh, yes.
Put her on the spot.
I could call her out, but
okay.
You also like
your
romance, but I do. I think you're going to.
Okay, yes.
What am I doing? What am I doing with those in the 2012 series? Was definitely Tiger Claw.
Mm-hmm. Tiger Claw is real good.
Tiger Claw, yeah.
Tiger Claw voiced Splinter and Rhyme. Indeed, the guy who voiced Tiger Claw in 2012 went on to voice Splinter and Rise. In fact, they made some kind of nods about that, like saying, oh, we wish you were a tiger instead of a rat. Yeah.
Yes,
yes. I don't know how.
Give up?
I would have to say Stacy from 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like 2012.
Yeah. So for those that didn't know, in 2000, Kevin Eastman actually sold his share of the Ninja Turtles to Peter Laird. So Peter Laird, up until 2003, was the sole owner of Ninja Turtles. And then in 2003, he sold it to Nickelodeon, who now own all the rights to the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
So that's when we get the Four Kids Entertainment Show, which ran for 7 seasons, concluded in 2009, and actually Peter Laird had a role in the production of that one, which is why it was a little bit darker than that 86 version that we had, and everything. It was more true to the comics. So from there, you kind of, in 2011, IDW Publishing took over as the sole comic studio. They write and release all of the Ninja Turtle comics. If any of you read any of that IDW Publishing Ninja Turtles?
Now I need to start reading some old Ninja Turtles.
So, that from 2011 until now, it's been the longest continuation story of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in comic book form. And they kind of, they start at the very beginning, and the story that they have been telling has been absolutely amazing. They're taking some of the villains and everything from the older cartoons and throwing them in there as well. So you're getting to see these, how they would flesh out. And it's a little darker than what the cartoons are, but still light enough that like your little kid could read it and understand it. They just recently, last year, introduced a fifth turtle, and then recently, even this year, they've introduced a sixth turtle. So the one that they introduced last year, her name is Jenica, and not giving too much away, but she was a human who was turned into a turtle using mutagen. And then the most recent turtle that they've introduced is Venus de Milo. But the story that they tell, it's a complete retelling of her origin story, and it's really dark and really amazing. I 100% recommend the IDW Publishing of the continuity of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So.
I mean, I don't know. Pretty much got up to sort of where they are right now with Nickelodeon still doing the kid-friendly stuff, but the comics line keeping it geared toward the, I'm not going to say adult audience, but the more grown audience. They did the most famous one IDW did so far that most people know would be The Last Ronin, which is really dark.
Has anybody here read The Last Ronin yet?
So The Last Ronin was actually a comic that was created by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird way back when. And the concept of it is, what if three of the four turtles die? Who takes up the mantle and runs with this? Yes, sir?
Just out of curiosity,
yes.
Out of all the turtles, why Michelangelo?
That's good. So,
probably because he was the one that no one expected.
Well, not only that, it forced him to mature.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because, you know, because every turtle has their own personality. Leonardo was the leader, Raphael was the hothead, Donatello was more of the smart strategist kind, and Michelangelo was basically, you know, like the cartoon.
He was the party dude.
He was the party dude, you know. So, again, like what Roger said, it made him mature, but then it's like, I have to be, I got to have leadership qualities like Leonardo, I got to have a mean streak in me like Raphael, I have to be smart and strategize like Donatello. He had to basically, it's the old saying, you know, you got to grow up quick, and that's what he had to do, you know. And it's, if you haven't read it, you need to read it. It is,
yeah, if you like comics, now if you're just for the TV shows, that's fine too.
Yeah.
Because they're really good shows.
Yep.
Is it a miniseries or is it part of it?
The Last Ronin?
Yeah.
It's its own kind of separate story that they're going back and retrograding into the continuity. Because they just released, so last year they did The Last Ronin. And then this year they produced a pre-sequel to that. And what I mean by pre-sequel is part of the book is set before The Last Ronin and part of the book is set after The Last Ronin. And this is where they are actually introducing four brand new turtles that will be the new continuity going forward. And later this year, or early next year, I'll have to get with my buddy Jason Flowers, who does artwork for the comics. He's here today.
Yeah, he's here.
Feel free to stop by his booth and ask him about that. Probably can't say too much about what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure he has like a release date on that. So they're coming out with The Last Ronin 2, which is supposed to start the new story arc with these new four turtles. And you kind of meet those in Last Run of the Lost Years.
Yeah.
So, so then going back a little bit in the timeline, in 2011, we got, you know, after a plethora of years, we got the first live-action Ninja Turtles. Michael Bay, Platinum Dunes, kind of produced it, and they took a whole different route with, like, the Ninja Turtles. And it was actually a huge box office success, and it received a sequel. However, the sequel was delayed quite a bit because they wanted to, the story that they had written that was the direct sequel was shot down by Nickelodeon. So then we get what comes to be Out of the Shadows, which follows more closely to the comics. You get to see Shredder, Super Shredder, and all that. So it's a little bit darker, a little more close to the comics and everything. And then from there, in timeline order, that's where we get Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which premiered in 2018. Sadly, it only ran for two seasons. They did make a movie about it. It was released just last year, 2022. You can only find that on Netflix, actually. So, yes, sir.
Sorry for asking so many.
No, that's what we're here for.
Exactly. Ask more questions.
A lot of people have been asking for this, but if you were to do another Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, would you do it on Netflix? Like season three?
Well, technically they can't, because Nickelodeon owns them, so they have to be on Paramount
Plus. Yeah,
yeah, unless they do some kind of a
partnership.
partnership deal, but more than likely it would be on Paramount Plus. Yeah, you can get that
with Walmart Plus.
Buy Straight Talk. Buy Straight Talk and you get it for free.
There you go.
Yes. That is not a paid sponsorship.
Which though.
Yeah. So yeah, that on Netflix is the only place you can see that Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, but everything else is on Paramount Plus. They got from the 86 series through all on Paramount Plus now, which I think is really cool. So yes, sir.
In the original comics, in the original canon of the comics,
yes,
wasn't Casey Jones slated to be like not really a villain to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, but wasn't he supposed to be like an anti-hero, like way darker than they ever portrayed him anywhere but the original comic?
He was going to be an antagonist to them, but he wasn't going to be a direct villain. He wasn't going to be an anti-hero to them.
Right.
Yeah, but they kind of sugarcoated him when they went to making TV shows and movies. Like they really...
Yeah.
Because he was supposed to be super dark, right?
Yeah, but you got to market somehow.
Yeah.
And sell toys.
Well, I mean, he was in the first movie. He wasn't in the second movie, and then he came back to the third movie.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so was his, could he have made an appearance in two and it makes sense for what they were trying to do for that? Which in one, it was perfect. Three, it was, you know, it's like he was there, but he didn't really do much.
Yeah.
You know, but he did something in the first one. He helped the turtles, you know, fight off the foot in the first one. So, you know, and again, like, could they have done more with that character? Probably, but, you know.
He was way darker in those original comics. You go back and read those, like, he was...
Is there any, like, layers or what's other...
Eastman?
Or did they ever talk about where he came from conceptually? Is there any inspiration?
I think it was just a hockey thing. They both like hockey.
They like hockey.
Yeah.
I told them I'm a very good fellow sports
man. The hockey stick that can do anything.
Even though it was a cricket bat.
Yeah. Now we have talked about, you know, turtles that were not the four original. You know, you get Venus, you get Jenica that I mentioned. Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird actually created a fifth turtle that never made it to the comics or anything. And ironically, the turtle's name was Kirby. And they created this turtle based off of kind of their idol, Jack Kirby. So for those who don't know, Jack Kirby is very instrumental. He helped create the Avengers, Fantastic Four, X-Men, and other iconic superheroes there. So the concept of this character is it would have been introduced via a magic crystal that could bring drawings to life. And concept art of this turtle that was never brought in actually just recently sold at an auction for $500.
It's pretty cheap.
And so it actually shows a somewhat savage looking turtle with striped skin and four fingers instead of three. So it's even more of a mutation there. Now there are, we don't have a whole lot of time left, so I'm gonna skip a little bit to some controversies that are right around the Ninja Turtles. So, as harmless as the 88 cartoon series was, it was heavily edited for broadcast in the United Kingdom and much of Europe due to they have a more stringent censorship system than we do here in America. And so they weren't allowed to use weapons.
They had their weapons, but could not use them.
Yes. And Michelangelo actually suffered the most because nunchucks in Europe are completely illegal.
Yeah.
So that any fight scenes that he was in, they took the ninja or they took the nunchucks out and digitized a grappling hook into.
Because that's safer.
because that's
yeah, I'd rather be knocked upside the head with nunchucks than get impaled with a grapple hook to the throat. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Safer.
No, it's not.
Safer.
It's not.
And they actually even changed the name of the show. Instead of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they had to change it to Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles. Because ninja is violent, so they say. Also, in 1990, after the first movie came out, there were 250,000 live turtles imported into Britain and sold as pets.
And it was illegal.
Well, it wasn't illegal at the time, but it became illegal later because the people would buy them for their kids. And then when they grew to full size, they were like, well, we don't have anywhere to put these. So they just let them go. And they devastated the ecosystem in the ponds and rivers that they let them go in. So, it was actually around 97, they banned the sale of the most popular turtle, the red-eared terrapin, completely. You cannot, still to this day, you cannot purchase a red-eared terrapin. They also, in 91, the turtles came under fire from the American Farm Bureau when they starred in Random House books. Ninja Turtles did a series of Random House books about the ABCs. However, in the book, they covered environmental issues, including a statement saying that some animals are injected with cancer-causing artificial growth hormones, and that much of the world's grain goes to feeding cattle rather than starving people. So the American Farm Bureau tried to sue, but they closed the case out of court, and part of that deal was that the book never actually got published. So it was written, it was there. I'm sure there's a copy of it, probably somewhere on the black market.
Maybe the UK.
And then the final thing, this is kind of for you, your favorite was the Four Kids Entertainment 03 version. It was actually a episode called Insane in the Membrane that was so dark it was pulled before it ever aired. Now, in this episode, Shredder actually tortures Baxter Stockman by slowly dismembering him. And so Stockman creates a clone and transplants his consciousness into that, and then his body decomposes, exposing muscle and bone, and he is forced to sew fallen body parts back together.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Why did they let that on 4K?
Yeah, unfortunately, he had no control at that point, though. Yeah.
He did.
I wonder who made that episode.
I don't know.
They were having a good day.
They were having so we have a few more minutes. That's all of the notes that I have. Other, we touched on it earlier.
What's up, boy?
You know, the next series is going to be called Tales of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and that will be the direct sequel to Mutant Mayhem, and it will be exclusively on Paramount Plus. Again, that is not sponsored, just letting you guys know that's where it will be.
What's
good? Who decided to make the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have the pizza?
So that was actually the original, I can't remember the name of it, the original production company of this series, decided, I can't remember the name, it's probably in the notes here.
pretty much all over.
Did Pizza Hut like come to San Francisco? Because there was pizza?
Probably.
In the show, right?
No, the show didn't. They had the show, they had a pizza to the show because of Pizza Hut.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. They made a partnership with Pizza Hut, and that's why Pizza Hut's the official Pizza Hut and the Turtles. Because they paid for it.
It was excellent marketing for the time.
Oh,
yeah, it was excellent marketing for the time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Still to this day, I mean.
Yeah. Because even in that first, the first movie in the 1990s, you see them waiting, and it's like, Pizza Dude's late. And it's
half an hour.
That scene alone has one of my favorite quotes in it of all time. Of all of them, he goes, "Forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza."
Yeah,
it's the greatest thing ever.
The one thing that I forgot to mention was Ninja Turtles have been in over 30 different video games, but the first one was released in 1989 on the NES, the regular Nintendo system. And it actually is the highest selling non-Nintendo property on that system. It sold approximately 4 million copies.
Yes.
And it's also listed as one of the hardest Nintendo games ever.
Because you got electrified seaweed. That's all you got to say.
Behind Battletoads.
Yes.
Yes. And I still have it. And I could never be.
I think Turtles in Time is a better overall thing, to be honest with you.
Anybody who beat the regular, that first game, they're a mutant themselves.
Exactly.
First you get Pizza Hut for life.
Right, I think so.
I'm a true video gamer. I did beat that version of the game.
Did you?
Yes, and it has a great scene at the end of credits after you beat the game, but you don't get Pizza for life.
And Chip just gets sad.
I'm still a little sad about it.
So we got a little bit of time. Let me ask you guys, who's y'all's favorite Ninja Turtle?
Donatello.
Rise. All right, let's get a show of hands. Whose favorite Ninja Turtle is Donatello?
Is it one, two, three?
All right.
So be so shy.
Be so shy.
It's okay to like him.
It's okay to like Donnie. Okay, whose favorite is Leonardo?
One, two, three.
A little bit more.
Okay. How about Raphael?
One, two.
All right, now the true GOAT, Michelangelo.
Looks like Leonardo's a true GOAT. Yeah.
Oh, I have one thing to share before you go. Okay?
Yes, go ahead.
I went to a liberal arts college, and one of the things our teacher tried to do, he said, now remember, he showed a statue by Donatello, like the original artist. He said, now just remember, one of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did this statue. That's your way to remember, but he goofed up because everyone put Michelangelo on the statue except me. Pretty much everyone just used that as the Ninja Turtle. Everyone always thinks of when you think of,
Donatello. Did you guys ever hear the theory as to why the turtles got the weapons that they got?
No.
You never heard that theory? Okay.
What'd you say?
The theory of why the turtles got the weapons that they got.
It's not a theory. Tell me why.
Well, for those of you who don't know, all right. So Michelangelo is the one that's he's the wild one, he's the goofy one and stuff. Why did Master Splinter give him nunchucks? Because in order to use nunchucks, you have to be very precise, very, very focused, and you have to learn to control it. And with the personality that Michelangelo had, you know, he's wild and goofy and stuff, but he had to learn to control it, right? You look at Donatello was the more tech-savvy of all the turtles, so what does Splinter give him to use? A stick, just a bow, and he had to learn to improvise with that. He then gives Raphael the size. Sais are mostly defensive weapons that you can use for offense, but they're mainly used for defense. And because Raphael's the most hot-headed of the one that would probably go for the kill quicker than anybody, he gave him the sais in order to control his rage and to be more defensive with his attacks and stuff. And then you got Leonardo. Leonardo is the only turtle to have a bladed weapon. He has the katanas. And it's so that as the leader, he needed to understand that there are some times where you would have to take a life. But always, always remember, to believe that, you know, you try to deflect the best way you can, but if there is a situation, you have to be the leader. And sometimes it's okay to do it if your life is in danger, you know. So, which I thought was very interesting when that came up, like, that does make a whole lot of sense. Because you give the guy who loves technology a stick. Here, do what you want with it, you know. But, I don't know. I don't know if anybody had that thought. That is something interesting to think about, though.
All right. Well, that is our time for today. But we will be back tomorrow. We're hosting Pokemon Trivia tomorrow.
Yes.
If anybody's interested, we'll be right back here in this room at noon. And there will be prizes, so...
Yes.
Yes.
And it's not easy.
Yes.
Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you guys so much.